I'm going to introduce three people all at once, and then I'll introduce them one by one as they take their turns. We're going to give each person, let's see what time it is. Because I want to be fair to Brian. I want to give Brian time, too. And Kate, you had asked for time, so we have to see. Okay, we're going to... Wow. Kate, can you cut yourself to 10 minutes? Okay. Because I've got 3:20 by my watch, so... And now from now is... What? I want you to 4:20. Yeah, we're gonna run a little over time today, but that's okay. I want to give Brian the 45 that I promised him. So, anybody object to running late? No, good. Thank you. Who we have up here right now is Nancy Miller from Vision Service for the Blind, Peter Slayton representing the Colorado Center for the Blind, and Dan Wenzel representing Blind Incorporated. Yes, we do. I'm going to take you all in alphabetical order, Miller, Slayton, and Wenzel. So couldn't figure out another way to do it. I could have tried to do Dan, Nancy, Peter, and that didn't work. You know. Well, it does work, but anyway. Having said all that, we're talking about the topic that we're talking about right now is residential rehab, the many faces of residential rehab. And if the conversation is important, it can be done in the hall, could it, you think? Okay, thank you. So let me give you somebody that we're familiar with. Those of us from New York City are very familiar with Nancy and her work. Let me give you for the first 15 minutes. I'm giving each of you 14 minutes so that you'll have a minute to wrap up. Nancy Miller from Vision Services for the Blind. Nancy, it's yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much for inviting me to come to convention this year. It's a pleasure to see so many of my colleagues and staff at Visions, and some people that I don't know at all, but we'd be happy to meet. Carl and Mindy specifically asked me to speak about the new residential vocational rehab center that we have built and has started providing service to blind young adults beginning this August. Visions Rehabilitation Center has been built on the campus of Visions Center on Blindness. VCB has been in existence on that campus since 1951 and has changed dramatically over those years from basically a recreation program to a program that was focused much more on independent living, on assistive technology, on rehabilitation, skills training, and on health awareness, both physical and mental health. So it seemed appropriate when we began to realize that there was a lack of residential training specifically for young blind adults ages 18 up to age 22 who would be meeting the federal WIOA, Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act, the new legislation emphasis on pre-employment transition services. So Visions, in collaboration with the New York State Commission for the Blind, many of the parents that we work with whose children are blind, and with our colleagues, came up with an idea of creating a new residential program specifically to target young adults who have other obstacles to success, in some cases not related to blindness at all. Our first session was a one-month session in August, and we had 5 young adults who successfully completed the program. And with their feedback, we started our next session in September, which is approximately 100 days. So our plan is to run 3 100-day sessions during the year, but during the summer, we will have the opportunity to serve people for shorter stays, if that makes sense for what their goals are. Right now, we have 14 blind students who are attending what we call the VRC, not VCR, the VRC, the Vocational Rehab Center. And I'll give you a little bit of an idea of who those 14 students are. We have one young woman who has a history of suicide attempts. She is dealing with a lot of emotional issues. But we said, just because you've had a history doesn't mean you don't have a future. And so she is now working toward getting the vocational skills she needs so that when she graduates, she will actually be job ready. We have another young man who is very, very, very bright, but does not like to deal with rules and regulations, and is a foster child, is living with a foster family, and has been fighting any kind of restrictions. He wants to do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. But he's so bright, and his blindness is the least of his difficulties. He's managed with his blindness. He graduated from high school, but he wanted to be able to live at the VRC and get a job working in retail at one of the big stores. And we said, John, you've got so much potential. Do you want to stay in a retail job your entire life? Or do you want to work towards something that's going to give you much more satisfaction? But you're going to have to learn to live with rules, because when you work as an employee, there are going to be rules on the job. Well, we're thrilled that John just let us know he's in a program at the local community college that's part of our VRC program, where the blind students are learning how to be teacher aides and nurses aides, which are jobs that are open in all parts of New York State and all parts of the country. And after failing his first two tests, John just got a 95 in class. Now, we knew he could do it. So what is this VRC all about? The peer support of being in a program where you're learning and using your assistive technology, where you're learning and using your mobility, where you're learning and using your braille, where you're learning and using your social skills, and having other blind young people your age learning next to you, beside you, giving you peer support, has been one of the very important ingredients. We also are focusing on what are the skills that the students have now and what are the skills that they could develop with our support. So we have one young woman who is great at technology, but she doesn't speak. Now imagine, you're blind and you don't speak. What kind of job can you do? Well, in fact, most computer jobs don't require you to speak. It's the computer talking to the computer. And so we're helping her figure out what kind of computer technology skills she needs, and she's pretty good at it, that will be able to land her a job where she will not have to do customer service, where she will not have to do a lot of speaking, but will be able to present her expertise computer to computer. It's a very individualized program, and I have to commend the New York State Commission for the Blind and the Office of Children and Family Services and the governor that enabled us to get a grant that enabled us to build this brand new building. It has 32 beds. It's two-story. It can accommodate blind people who are also wheelchair users, who are dog guide users. The building is set up so that it's very similar to a college dormitory. We wanted to normalize the experience as much as possible so that we would be able to give blind young adults an opportunity to be in a building very similar to what it would be like if they were living in a college dorm. That turned out to be very helpful because at least one of the students that is in the program right now tried college and failed. And to the credit of their rehabilitation counselor at the commission, the counselor said, look, you have the capability of succeeding in college, but you have to show me that you can do it because you failed out this first year. And so that student is taking community college classes and doing extremely well and will be able to go back to the four-year college where they failed out when this program is over.
Hey, excuse me, Nancy, two minutes.
Okay. So we would love to have you come and visit and learn about the program. I know we have a few people who are coming to an open house on November 29th. If you have more questions about the program, Carmen Thorne is here from Visions. She's at one of the exhibit tables, and you can ask her any questions about the program. She knows the students well, and she knows the facilities that we have. We invite you. We are doing, if you've heard of speed dating, we are doing speed interviews. And what we've done is we've brought blind and sighted people who are willing to talk about the job that they do and introducing them to the 14 students. And they have 5 minutes to tell the student their job and for the student to ask a question. And then they move on to the next employed person so that we can expose these young adults to jobs that they may not have even thought of that they could be doing and that might potentially interest them. And the other part of this program is job shadowing and internships. We all know the best way to get a job is to experience a job, to have a job, to know what a job requires. And so part of the VRC program is making sure that the blind young adults are exposed to as many different types of jobs as possible so that they're not slated into the jobs for the blind, because all jobs are for the blind, and that's really what we believe we need to expose them to. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Just the information is Carmen at the Visions or Acelis for a phone number.
Carmen Thorne is right here.
Oh, okay. And, never mind. She's in the back. She is in the back. She's talk to her later. No, okay. You're back there. Anybody who wants to see
everybody
Carmen?
Hear me? I talk pretty loud when I need to. I have on flash drive literature about the VRC and all the problems, and as well in Braille and in large print. And I'll be happy to speak with everyone after the session's over. Thank you.
Thank you, Carmen. Thank you. Next presenter, let's see if we can hold the same time. Nancy did very well holding time. You know how to use up exactly the time we give you, Nancy.
And
to the second. I've been at public forums with you. Peter Slayton, talking about Colorado Center for the Blind.
Thank you, Carl, and thank you, everyone, for having me.
You've got the same 15
me.
Minutes minus two.
All right. Minus two, what up? Anyway, first I want to say congratulations to Nancy for getting this program up and running. And I think it's great that you're focusing on that group, that age group, and in very focused, targeted program. So that's wonderful. You know, a lot of people think of the NFB centers as maybe being in competition with each other. And of course, we're not, although the Colorado Center is way better than Blind Aid. But I graduated, and, you know, we were just talking about jobs. I want to say the great job I just heard about that one of our young graduates just started yesterday. He's always wanted to be a professional sportscaster, and yesterday he was the color commentator for the University of Pennsylvania women's hockey contest. So that was amazing. So I graduated from the Colorado Center a year and a half ago at the ripe age of 61. And my point about that, the reason I say that, is it doesn't matter where you are in your life and at what point, and you can go to any one of these centers and learn amazing things, pick up the skills you need and many of my friends said, why are you going? I've been a professional journalist and done lots of things, had a fair amount of success professionally. And people think, you've lived in New York City for 40 years, what do you need to do? What's that going to give you? Why are you taking all these months away from home? And I said, because I want to be a better blind person. I need to be better at being blind. I want to be as effective as I can be. And the thing is about all of these centers, any education program you're in, and those of you who are in whether in college or graduate school now know this is true as well, you're going to get out of it what you put into it. Nothing more, nothing less. And what's great about the center is what's great about Colorado, and I'll get in, it's 30 years old. We have our own residential facility. We have beds for 32 students, and people come. It's not set classes. The classes come. You are admitted, and you go for your. The traditional program is 9 months. I did it in 7 months, because I'm old. But
experience.
President Rick Obono apparently did it in 5 months, and no one is allowed to do it faster than that now. In Colorado, yes. And what it gives you is a foundation to go out and return to the world at large and exercise your abilities in the best possible way, to be as proficient as possible. Now, you know that no place is perfect. No institution is perfect. Everyone has their flaws. Everything has its flaws, but also everything has its upside. And so what you get when you come to Colorado is you're confronted with yourself and your own limitations, and you have a great professional staff of well-trained people who will train you in Braille, cane travel, home management, which is cooking and cleaning, and
what's the last one?
Technology, assistive technology. There's a wood shop also, and there's an arts program too. And also people go, we do field trips to go skiing or whitewater rafting, or let's just say rafting, rock climbing, things like that. So there's lots going on. It's a very full program. Everyone has a very full day. It starts at 8, ends at 4:30, and people are exhausted. You're responsible for purchasing your own food and preparing it. 3 meals a day. Of course, the meals you make during class, during your home management class, are part of that. You're responsible for maintaining your apartment and helping your roommate, working with your roommate to maintain your apartment. And that's actually also part of it, is learning to live and work with others who are not people you know. They're strangers, many of them. You might know some of them, you might not, but they're all part of the mix. It's all one program that's pretty holistic. It's woven in so that you're interacting with society, with your society. You work with, all of the faculty are members of various, and some are heads of various NFB chapters in Colorado. And so it's easy to get drawn into the Colorado affiliate, very easy. And one reason Colorado as a state has a very large and very active state affiliate is because of the success that the CCB has had in graduating students and putting them out into the world. Students graduate, they stay in Colorado, many of them. They don't return to their home states, many do. And the states, you know, people say, well, why don't they have to return to the home states if they're getting funded by their state commission? And that is because a lot of that money from the state comes from the federal government. So it doesn't matter where you spend it when you graduate or where you go to earn your money. The center is, it's very straightforward. What you do when you get there, you have to learn how to get around. It's a difficult and challenging environment. You have to learn who your classmates are. You have to learn what is expected of you. And, you know, yesterday we were talking about advocacy in the school arena. And frankly, again, no matter how old you are, and they have students, most students, it's between 19 and I know students who graduated 70 or 71. But also, as Ruth was discussing, there is a program, a week-long residential program for seniors called Seniors in Charge, and they go and live in the same facility that everyone else lives in and partake of the same programs. There's also, they also have an active weekly, or bi-weekly, I think, or twice weekly, I should say, seniors program where seniors meet and go through what we all go through, learning Braille, cane travel, and, you know, one very important component of what happens at the CCB is what's called philosophy. And you can call it group therapy, you can call it group discussion. It's a daily sit-down with everyone in the school, all the students, and a couple faculty people, and talking about various issues related to blindness. And that's where really the rubber meets the road, where you're learning what you're out there in the community doing, whether you're out doing cane travel and trying to get around Denver or the little suburb of Littleton that's really a great little town, or whether you're in Braille trying to, as I was, trying to learn Braille. I never studied Braille before, and I realized I didn't have to be a fluent Braille reader. I don't need to read 200 words a minute, but I want to learn some Braille. I want to learn Braille. I want to know how to use it, and it's been an incredibly enriching experience. It's been very challenging, and it makes me very happy to do that. But in philosophy class, you sit down and you put those thoughts to the test. Why do some people want to carry canes? Why do some people feel embarrassed to carry canes? What is the role of blind people in the media? How are blind people presented in the media? Just all kinds of questions. People tell their stories. Everyone has a story, and you all know that. Sitting here, you all have a really interesting and important story to tell about how you came to this point in your life. That's what the CCB gives you. Now, the CCB has, they'll bring you to the Colorado State Convention, which, as I said, is like this. It's really active and really exciting. They will bring you also to the National Convention, as they will in Minnesota and Louisiana. And that's part of your education as well. But the most important thing is really to find yourself in these centers. And you'll be working with students of many different ages. When I was there, there were students, as I said, from 18 to 70. I'm so glad I wasn't the oldest one. But I really got to see up close and personal the challenges that people with various kinds of challenges of blindness, people who are born blind, people who have been losing their sight gradually through various genetic or other disorders, people who lost their sight through tragedy and calamity, and what we learn that it's a collaboration. We learn to judge ourselves for ourselves, and it's an invaluable experience. It has been for me. Okay. What's going on? Oh, okay. Well, and wait, just a second.
I didn't hear him stop.
No. Speaking of dogs. You know, there has been kind of a, and I heard this before I went to the CCB, I heard that the centers, the NFV centers, were kind of anti-guide dog. And so I was a little, had some trepidation about that. I had my Roya, and I thought, what's going to happen? Well, what happened, I found, is that Roya was usually welcomed by everyone, loved by everyone who loves dogs. Because if people don't love dogs, then she wasn't welcomed by them. But most people love dogs. And you bring your dog with you to school. Once school starts, you put your dog on tie down for the school day, and you proceed through the school day. At lunch, I would go fetch her and take her out to do her business, and she would hang out with me through lunch and then go back to her tie down at the end of the day, go get her, and go home. And she would be with me through the night, and on the weekends, of course, if I wanted to practice cane use, I could leave her either with someone or by herself. But there was no stigma, there was no problem at all. And so please don't be concerned about that. Why did I want to, other people asked me, why do you want to learn cane travel? You have a dog. And I said, well, I can't always use the dog, and I may not always want a dog. You know, sometimes dogs are, you know, I would like to be without my dog, you know, and it's just that way. So I want to be proficient with my cane. I don't want to feel vulnerable and ineffective. By the way, the CCB, you know, the NFB does rate the centers. Looks at how effective they are, looks how well they're performing, how well they're meeting their targets and their goals. And I'm very proud to say that CCB received a 100% rating this year. And really, really amazing. Led by Dr. Eddie Bell. And, you know, if you have questions, of course, you can ask me. You can write to the center's director, who is at Julie Deedan, JULIE.DEDAN, at cocenter.org. I have materials upstairs. I neglected to bring it down, but I'll bring it down. And it'll be available at dinner if anyone wants to find me. And I guess
you've got 2 minutes if you want to use them.
I can say something for 2 minutes. I really can.
It's up to you.
Thank you.
Okay.
I think I'll hold off on that. I may make it up later. But thank you very much.
Let me thank you, Peter. Thank you. And at the end of the alphabet, we get a W. Okay. One question. Well, no, wait. We had time for questions later, and we weren't taking them from the floor. They had to be up here, remember? Nobody read their agenda. Mindy will have questions at the end. Mindy will have questions for the panelists. I didn't want repetitious questions. I wanted to make sure we got everything covered. That's why Mindy's got the questions up here. She only has two, so if somebody wants to braille a question real quick and get it up here, that'll be fine. Anyway, let me give you, for the perspective from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Blind Incorporated, the executive director of Blind Incorporated, Dan Wenzel.
Good afternoon, fellow Federationists. All right. Now, I'm going to take a minute of my time to give something to Carl because he's worth it. Those of you who may not know, but Carl Jacobson also serves on our Blind Incorporated board. And as we know, this is going to be his last term as president of the NFB of New York. And so I wanted to present to you, and Dr. Maurer and I did not plan this, I'm going to give you a Blind Incorporated hat. It's blue, so after you put on your NFB shirt, you can put on your hat. It's got the Blind Incorporated emblem, and it says, Build Your Future. So, Carl, with much respect, I give you the hat. So let's talk about building your future. And I'm not, you know, the NFB centers have, of course, many, many similarities. So I'm not going to repeat what my friend to the left here has told you, but take a little different approach. If you think about building your future, it entails that it's going to take work. And if you're going to build your future, you have to start somewhere, and you have to be willing to work. Wine Incorporated was established in 1986 by our members in Minnesota, our NFB, National Federation of Blind Minnesota members, after repeated attempts to make positive changes to the state rehabilitation services that were already in place in Minnesota had failed. Before Blind Inc., expectations were low and services were of poor quality. Through the establishment of Blind Inc., the National Federation of the Blind changed that paradigm. High expectations and quality training challenge students to reach their personal, educational, and professional goals. If you think about it, we have a history in the National Federation of the Blind. If something isn't working and people won't work with us, we'll do it ourselves. And that's exactly what we've done with the centers, and Blind Incorporated is no exception. Eventually, people from other states wanted to receive quality training also, so Blind Inc. opened its doors to people from out of state. So I want to talk to you a bit about aspects of a quality rehabilitation program. So in our programs, students use blindfolds. And that I get a lot of questions. Why in the world, if someone has some residual vision, would you use blindfolds? Why take away someone's vision? And the reason is that there is no better technique than an alternative technique, because it will always work. I have a fair amount of residual vision myself. But I'll tell you what, with an alternative technique, it doesn't matter what lighting I'm in. It doesn't matter whether it's dark or bright outside. It doesn't matter whether I've got just the right font on the computer. An alternative technique will enable me to access information easily. Now, when our students graduate, and those that have worn the blindfold in order to gain those skills, they don't never use their vision again. Of course they use their vision. But they now have a tool to fall back on when it's not effective. It's seamless. When I'm traveling, there's times I use my vision. There's other times I'm using my audio cues. When I cross a street, I rarely try to squint and see whether there's a walk sign, because I've got parallel traffic and those sounds to help get me across. Never should the lack of vision stop you from reaching your goals. Our students are required to carry a long white cane. And there are a couple of variations of the model, but essentially it's usually a carbon fiber or fiberglass cane. NFB produces many of them. They're long, somewhere usually between the chin and nose, maybe a little longer for those that are experienced travelers. I'm going to tell you that I call them the king or queen of canes, if you prefer. They've got a metal tip, they're light, and they're outstanding. We don't have students carrying collapsible or folding canes, because we want students to be able to deal with their blindness and learn how to use the most effective tool there is out there. So you will carry a long white cane. You'll get a chance to see the cane. You know, our programs are comprehensive in nature. It's not a menu program. Paul didn't get to go to Colorado, or people that have gone to Blind Inc., they didn't get to say, well, you know, I'd really like to take Braille, but I don't need that travel. Because we can't choose what skill is more important. Is being able to get around more important than literacy? Is literacy less important than knowing technology? We do need to know how to cook for ourselves and make ourselves presentable. We need to be able to problem solve, which industrial arts is a great opportunity to do that. You learn to use hand tools and power tools, and you develop a couple projects, and then you develop your own project, and throughout you problem solve, and you do things that you didn't think you could do as a blind person, and you come back with some skills, so when you're a homeowner, you actually have a chance to not pay somebody to come in and do fixing. You can fix it yourself. Careers is important, but we don't put people in our careers class until they have learned the skills that they need to be effective. A lot of people want to start you right away. Okay, well, what are you going to do? What's going to be your job? You really can't choose what your career is going to be until you know what skills you have, until you know what your capabilities are. And often the students that we get in the program, they're not so sure. Or maybe professionals have told them, oh, I don't know if you can do that. I don't know too many blind doctors. I don't know too many blind engineers, so you might want to stay away from those fields, you know. But I do know a lot of, you know, I know a lot of blind social workers, so let's go in there. We don't approach it like that. One of the things we do is when they first get there, they take careers for about 2 weeks, and the first question we ask them, and they're allowed to change their mind, but what is it that you want to do when you're done with the program? Isn't that empowerment? You know, what do you want to do? And then we start to work from there, because we're going to give you the skills that you will be able to use no matter where you're at and no matter what job you're in. Primarily, you work with blind role models, teachers that know the skills that they're teaching. Our sighted staff also has been trained. We require our sighted staff to learn under sleep shades as well, so they have the 9 visual techniques that they can pass on to our students. It's very important. In our programs, we don't have students coming back again and again and again for programming. Our students take a program, average of 9 months, and then they're done. That doesn't mean they never go to a class somewhere to maybe get skills on the latest iPad thing, but they know how to problem solve, and they have the basic foundation of skills so they can build their future. We do have seminars, and it's an important part of our program. We think that it's so important that we run them at Blind Incorporated 4 times a week. We run seminar, and it's infused with the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind. It's not designed to say, oh, poor me, I'm a blind person, and look how much I'm struggling. Instead, it's designed to, how can I overcome these challenges? And the organized blind movement, of course, has a lot to do with that, because we've got people in this room that have helped inform, you know, how we do things. I want to talk a little bit about some of our individual programs. Our Adjustment to Blindness program is our 9-month program, and students live in apartments, and our apartments are 1.5 blocks away from the light rail. Our apartments are within less than 0.5 mile of a bus stop and a bus that will get you to the center. Our students learn various ways to get to Blind Incorporated. And we don't just, yesterday I had a question, do you just tell people get to the center? Absolutely not. We have people that work, staff that works with our students until they start to learn the way to the center. We teach them different ways to get there, and then as they're comfortable, they start traveling in independently. We expect our students to arrive by 8 a.m. in the morning, and they're done at 4:30 in the evening, just like a job. You know, and that's what they're going to be doing in a job. But I think it's important that they're accessing good quality public transportation each and every day. Now let me tell you about these apartments. We live in the Stadium View apartments, which are near the University of Minnesota. And the apartments have a 24-hour concierge desk. They have a 24-hour workout room, 24-hour computer lab. They have study rooms. We have a theater that we can rent for no cost. We can rent for half a day, and so we can show, you know, we can show Do You See in Color right in the theater with our students and have a good seminar after that. We can meet in that theater area and have, you know, a Thanksgiving party. And so those are things that we can do, but maybe the best thing about the apartments is that we're integrated with all kinds of sighted people, college students, you know, families. And so students are interacting with the public each and every night in addition to what they do during the day. And then they're using public transportation because it's all around, and restaurants and stores are all within walking distance. I think that's important because we can't isolate our students. We do take our students to state and national, the NFB National Convention. I believe it's going to be in Orlando again this year. All right, we're excited to bring some Minnesota to Orlando. cool it down, that's right. And that's such an important thing, because then we get a chance to meet other successful blind people. You know, there are meetings where students get to go, and if they want to be a blind lawyer, we know a number of blind lawyers. If they want to be a teacher of blind students, we know a number of teacher of blind students. You know, if they want to get into the science field, there's people that they can meet. So it's really important. Plus, they get to learn the philosophy of the National Federation of the Blind. Let me tell you just about 2 students we have now. One of them recently, he's a person from Indiana, and he recently had a chance to, for the first time, use public transit to go to a drugstore and get his medicine, stop for a bite to eat, and return home. That's empowering. Yeah, you should applaud that. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't want you to think that every student that attends there only has the beginning level of blindness skills. We have another student that's actually from New York State, And she has many blindness skills, and she's had some successful internships. But right now, she's just trying to upgrade her skills so when she goes on to her job, she will be successful. Now, it wasn't a big deal for her to travel to the drugstore or travel to the store, but we're challenging her in other ways. And by the time she leaves the program, she will have been dropped 3 different times in unknown locations, and she will get back to Blind Incorporated asking only one question. She will complete an over 6-mile walk, and she will come back to using Braille instructions, and she'll make it back. She will have served a meal for 40 students, at least 40 students, maybe more, depending when that meal occurs, and she will have done that all using non-visual techniques. She will have served a meal for 6 students and learned how you would network, and that so when she's ready to invite her future boss to her home for a meal, she's not going to have any trouble making that occur. She will have developed a project of her choosing, and she will have problem-solved and used hand tools and power tools to get the job done. She will have been in careers class, and she will have updated her resume, and she will have looked into the best chance for her to reach her goals. That's what it's about. We have an English language learning program where we bring in folks that blind people that do not know English, and we teach them English while having them learn the skills of blindness. If you think about traditional English language learning programs, they show a picture of a car, they say, "This is a car," they spell out car, and it's all done visually, and the blind person that doesn't speak English is already lost. So we bring them in and we teach them the skills. We're teaching them to use the computer. We're teaching them Braille as we're teaching them English. And we're giving them tactile information so they are learning what a car is and learning how to say that in English. And yes.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Gotcha. So that's important. I want to talk. We have a youth program that goes for 8 weeks, and we enable our students to have 3 weeks of job component, and they work with counselors who are blind and successful blind role models. We offer training for professionals, both at State Services for the Blind and out of state. We have a seniors class that goes for 10 weeks, 2 times a week, learning non-visual techniques. I want to talk briefly about some of our WIOA programs, our WIOA programs and PRIETS programs. We have college programs. College students can attend Blind Inc. during the summer for a couple summers, so they don't lose any class time, but they still get the skills. We also have year-round programming where students will take a college course, and then they will also learn skills of blindness. We are in a crisis situation in education. A 2016 study says that within 2 to 3 years, 1/3 of our Teacher the Blind students and O&M instructors in Minnesota will retire. This is what happens throughout the country. So we provide Teams programming twice a week on Saturdays to transition age youth 14 to 21 years of age. We offer a Trails to Transition program where we go to isolated locations in Minnesota in order to reach youth that might not know us otherwise. Finally, we have the Summer Training Youth Experience Style program. They're 3 1-week programs that have specific things, like this year the thing was sports and recreation, money management, and travel. But we still have them learn all the other skills of blindness. I will close with this. We had a buddy program, which is for our young students, and David called us, and he's a grandfather who's blind, and his daughter Lily was 8 years old. And we had somebody who, she needed to be 9 to be in the program, and he said, "Can't I come to the program and learn skills while she's learning skills?" And we're thinking to ourselves, you know, why not? So he went into our adult program, so he wasn't, you know, over the student and just always there. And she went into the buddy program, and for 3 weeks they each learned skills of blindness. What sets us apart? Expectations, quality training, transferable skills. We have no need to return to programming. It's innovative. It's consumer-driven by the National Federation of the Blind. We don't impede age-appropriate independence in the name of safety. We instead teach the skills so all of our students can be safe. And maybe the most important component is we are part of the National Federation of the Blind. I'll be available if you want to talk to me. I have plenty of information. Thank you very much.
And Dan will also be here all evening. He'll be here until tomorrow. Dan, thank you very much. Nancy, Peter, thank you very much. Mindy has questions. Mindy has questions, and I'm going to pass her the mic. I'll hold it in front of her because she's reading them in Braille.
Thanks. guess. Here you go. Thank you. Okay. Let's see. The first one will be for Dan. Okay. And this is from Antonio. He says, could you address prospective students who are dog guide users and how they can maintain the bond and the training of the dog while attending the program at Blind Inc?
I'm going to say that Paul did a very, Peter, I'm sorry. Peter did a very good job of doing that. We do a similar thing. They bring the dog into the center in the morning. We have a place for the dogs where they're kenneled. They, in at lunchtime, the students are able to get their dog and take care of it, the personal needs, and then the dog is put back, you know, is back at the center while they learn in the afternoon classes. The student lives in an apartment, so they have a chance to use their dog all the time in the evenings, on the weekends, and I think we find that they become better guide dog users because their cane skills are improving so much that I think... And Peter agrees, it's true. So we work them on that. Now, if we're doing a thing where we're going to be late at night or into the next day, we can make some exceptions, of course. But ultimately, we're really pushing for those cane skills, and then they're going to be better guide dog users. I hope that answers your question.
Here, I got it. Oh, okay. For, yeah, but it's not picking me up. That's why I say give it to me. Okay. All right, good. I got it now. Okay, for Nancy, what is the value of hiring blind O&M instructors in your program?
We hire qualified mobility instructors, whether they're blind or sighted. There unfortunately aren't as many blind instructors in New York State. We did have a blind mobility instructor on our staff for a number of years until he moved. Right now, we are recruiting for a mobility instructor who would be working itinerant in New York City. So if you are a mobility instructor, certainly apply. I think it's like any other job that you need to be qualified. It doesn't matter whether you're blind or sighted.
Okay. Okay. Your hand's in the way of it. Okay. All right. I think I got it now. Okay. This one is, that, by the way, was also from Antonio. This is from Rashida for Peter. What is the selection process, and what are the requirements for acceptance to the CCB program?
Thank you. That's a great question, Rashida. The answer is that it is on an individual basis. You'll do an interview. You'll fill out an application. I'm sorry. I'm saying that's a great question. The answer is that it's on an individual basis. You will fill out an application. You will do a phone interview with Julie, Dan's counterpart. You will hopefully, if you can, arrange a visit ahead of time. Not everyone does. I think it's important to feel that you are physically able to work in that setting. It is the Mile High City. Some people arrive to Denver and find out that for whatever reason they really can't handle that altitude. Some people find that we do also, to get to our school from the apartments, we take a bus, a public bus, and then there's a short but interesting walk to the center. Again, just as in Minnesota and in Louisiana, new students will be guided, will learn the route, and you'll quickly learn the route. And so I think it's on an individual basis. Of course, you'll need to convince your counselor, your caseworker, that you need this. I was asked by my caseworker here in New York State why I wanted to go to Colorado when I could easily stay here. And I said, because some of the most effective blind people I know and some of the smartest blind people I know are graduates from there or have highly recommended the center, and that's why I want to go there. And she said, okay. And by the way, I went, I originally was going to go for only 3 months. I thought, what am I going to do over 9 months? You know, well, I was there 6 weeks, and I said, this is not going to cut it. I'm not going to learn what I need to learn. And I called my caseworker and said, I need to extend this. And she said, take as long as you want. And that was amazing, and I did. So, but it is up to you to show that you can handle it, but I think the center is there to encourage and help you through that entry process.
Peter, I just want to point out, Peter, you're from New York, right?
Yes.
Originally.
I'm originally from New York. I live in New York City, and yeah. When I finished at the center, even before I finished, I said, I want to stay involved in this place, and I found my way onto the board.
My reason for asking is just to point out to people in the audience. They said, my counselor said they don't send people out there. They send me to the Carroll Center. They won't send me to Blind Inc. They won't send me to CCB.
They won't send me to
LCB. Dan has a student from New York right now. Peter's from New York. He went to CCB. The commission will send you to those places. Yeah. And thank you, Brian, for that.
CCB currently has a New York student. Or two.
Another question, Mindy?
I have two more. Yeah. Okay. Let me just take it. Okay. So I have two more questions. One is a follow-up on the question about, this is for Nancy, on the question about mobility, blind mobility instructors. Any requirement for vision, like how much vision does a person need to have in order to be a mobility instructor?
No.
Okay.
Well, there's a New York
answer.
That's a New York answer.
I got one more. That was short. Okay, and I have another question for Nancy here, and that is, how are meals served? Are they cafeteria style or, do the students serve themselves in some way?
So actually Carmen can probably answer this more specifically, but it's set up similar to a college dorm, a college cafeteria. So you go up to an area with a tray, and the food is put on the tray, and then you go back from that serving area to your table. We actually have one of the students is the assistant to the chef. So we have a blind assistant to the chef who assists in the cafeteria. And if there's a student, we have one student who uses a reverse walker in addition to other adaptive mobility devices. And so he requests whatever particular assistance he needs. But for the most part, the students are basically going to an assembly line where they get their tray, they get their food, and then they bring it back to their table on their own.
Carl, can I add on to that?
Yeah, sure.
If there's time.
We've only collectively only have a few minutes.
Okay, just quickly, I just want to say, you know, one of the differences between Nancy's program and the schools is Nancy's program is very focused on getting the students to accomplish what they need in terms of career. Is that job, vocation, and career? And when you go to Colorado or Minneapolis or Louisiana, you're learning a much broader skill set, and that's it. You know, we do that, and I don't think, I love the NFB philosophy, and it has worked wonders for me. But I think, as anyone who's an educator knows, learning styles are not one size fits all. So I think you have to keep an open mind.
And if I might just add to that all of the students that we are serving have been blind for many years, if not being born blind. So one does not exclude the other. There are opportunities to learn the independent living skills and the adjustment to blindness skills, in addition to learning the skills that you need to transition to work. And I don't think one can substitute for the other. I think you need both.
I want to thank the three of you for a very open, actually interesting discussion. I know about all three of your places, but I still was rapt by the three of your presentations. Felt like I was hearing it for the first time.
Thank you.
I have to listen to Dan present. At every board meeting, you have to listen to Dan present. Very, very good, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much.